This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
And you are listening to Saturday Magazine with Bronwyn Pike and myself, Tass. Last week, I think I mentioned in our introduction that we had a long conversation with Misha Ketchell from The Conversation about freedom of press. Today we're going to look at it from a slightly different perspective. We've got Emily Howie from the Human Rights Law Commission, Human Rights Law Centre, who's here to talk to us about the very same topic, but really from a legal perspective and also a human rights perspective. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Great to have you.
Hi, Emily.
Great to have you on the wires so early in the morning. That's Bronwyn Pike and I'm Tass. So, Emily, we saw your media release early this week. You particularly went to a bit of trouble to say that last year the government introduced new espionage offences that make it an offence to deal with information that concerns national security and that penalties of 25 years can be applied. Now, tell us more about that, because I don't know that most people are aware of that.
Yeah, this is part of a range of laws that were passed in 2018 that sort of amended some of our secrecy offences and also amended the offences of espionage. And the changes mean that for anybody who deals with information concerning national security in a way that could prejudice Australia's national security, then they could be facing 25 years, even life imprisonment. It is obviously, there is room in Australia for us to have an offence of espionage. But what we were really concerned about was that this espionage offence really seemed to make it an offence to actually for a whistleblower to pass on information about anything to do with Australia's national security. And that includes damage to Australia's reputation. The way that it's defined in that act would mean that if you passed on something that damaged Australia's reputation, like the story where it was revealed that ASIS had bugged the Indonesian president's phone and his wife's phone, the journalists and the whistleblowers who are involved in that could very well fall foul of these new offences. It's deeply worrying.
So, I'm interested in you unpacking that a bit more, because you know, most of our listeners and, you know, most of the people in my world wouldn't know how to identify information about who bugs which other, you know, senior official around the world.
They would potentially if they were, working close to that sector.
Well that's right, but most of us don't. And so how can this be interpreted and where could this be applied that would be, you know, tangible and understood by most people in our community?
Yeah, so I think, for the way that we look at it, what we need for a free press is not only that we have good news organisations that are able to, deliver the news independently, but you also need to have a society where people who work in government, for example, can reveal wrongdoing and misconduct if they see it behind closed doors. So, yes, possibly national security and Australia's economic reputation, that kind of provision is more likely to apply to somebody who works.
Yeah. Your mind goes to, doesn't it, you know, the whole stuff that was happening in the Iraq war, you know, the torture and mistreatment of prisoners, or, you know, things where things are being done in government's names and then the world finds out about it and they go, no, we don't want that kind of world. Allowing for that to happen is absolutely critical.
Yeah,
you know, for that kind of exposure. But then, you know, it's, I think what Tass is probably getting at is, you know, how do you find a line, you know, between, you know, genuinely you do need some sort of security and you need to be able, like, if, you know, if the federal police, for example, are trying to uncover some sort of covert plot to blow up a building or something, they don't need everybody blabbing about it. Halfway through the investigation, but on the other hand, we don't want to see our you know, things being done in our name that we think are inhumane, for example.
Yeah, that's right, and that's why I think, you know, when parliaments are crafting these laws, it's just so important that all that this kind of balancing is taken into account in the right way, because the espionage offences, you know, they apply a lot to really Australia's reputation, perhaps overseas, perhaps more to things that are likely to have some in international dimension. But there's other laws in Australia, the secrecy offences that I referred to earlier, that criminalise government employees who reveal similar kinds of misconduct in Australian government. And that's where you want to make sure that things like abuses inside prisons or inside aged care facilities or, you know, the treatment of young people in youth detention.
Well, okay, very, very important case, isn't it, with, you know, the Don Dale Centre?
That's right.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that what we've had, unfortunately, is all these laws passed in the last 15 years that make it more and more difficult and raise the stakes so much for anybody who knows about something going wrong, raises the stakes so much for them giving it to news outlets and raises the stakes for news outlets in reporting it as well.
So how much of this was a reaction to, you know, in the framing of all these laws, how much of a role did WikiLeaks and the whole Julian Assange thing have to play in all of this? Is it relevant?
I think that's a really good question. I think that what we've seen in Australia is really the major turning point has been the attacks on September 11 in New York. And we have passed hundreds of laws since then that impact that have been
and spent millions of billions of dollars.
So I don't know how much WikiLeaks is the driver of it, although, you know, very notably, the Australian government is doing the absolute bare minimum, if that, to defend Assange. I'm sure he's not well liked. But I think the problem is that when the MPs really haven't been doing their job when they're passing these laws.
No, well, they're not looking closer. They're not thinking about unintended consequences. And now everybody's going shock and awe. You know, we're raiding the ABC and we're raiding Channel 7, isn't it? And everyone's going, oh, hang on, we didn't mean to do that. So you're right.
Someone did,
but then a whole lot of people were asleep at the wheel while it was happening.
Emily, there's something clearly wrong with these laws. How do we fix it? What's needed?
I'd say that there's three things that we really need to do. One is properly protect freedom of speech and press freedom in Australia. The second one is make sure that whistleblowers inside government who know about human rights abuses or wrongdoing can safely reveal that where it's in the public interest to do so. And the third thing is we need to take a really good look at the surveillance powers that we've granted to law enforcement and intelligence agencies and rein them in.
And is that... And by that, do you mean the legislation that currently is in place?
That's right. So they've been given really excessive powers to look at all of our phone and internet records, for example, without even getting a warrant. We just don't have the basic safeguards in Australia that other people in the UK or the US or Canada would have when those countries have passed those laws.
That's amazing that you say, though, that you hire. I was going to ask you about the international, how we compare it with the international legal framework. And I think most Australians would think, oh, well, you know, the police and the authorities in the US have, you know, just got unfettered power to, you know, impact on the privacy and the democratic rights of the individual. But you say our laws are actually go further than those countries. That's like a gobsmacking moment. Oh.
One thing that all of the other countries in our Five Eyes Alliance, so that's New Zealand, Canada, USA and UK, all have, is a national law that protects human rights. Whether it's a Bill of Rights.
That was to be a question, you know, the Bill of Rights, and would that help?
It would, because what those laws require is that when politicians are making laws, that they not only think about their really pressing concern of national security, but they weigh that up against, well, how much are we actually infringing on people's rights?
Mm.
And let's do that in the least intrusive way possible. So let's make sure that when we give the police these powers, we add in these safeguards, like a warrant for access, or making sure that you can't access journalists' metadata because the free press has this special place in a democracy. And so one thing it would do is turn politicians' minds to what is to human rights concerns when they're passing laws. And in some places like the United States, the Bill of Rights will actually protect those rights in a court. So if the law is inconsistent and violates rights, it will be unconstitutional and be struck down. Mm. So I think we've really suffered in Australia, and our laws have become so out of whack because of that. We need to restore that balance to lawmaking.
So are you hopeful? How's the campaign going? You know, where do we do the lobbying?
Well, is there a campaign?
Is there a campaign? I mean, I have to say I'm not filled with hope.
There is a campaign, and there's a Charter of Rights campaign for Australia. We've just actually, one thing that does fill me with hope is that Queensland just passed a Human Rights Act a couple of months ago, something that has been happening, you know, behind the scenes for a few years now.
Well, Victoria has one as well, I think at the end of the day, state-based human rights acts are not going to really impact on what's happening now at a national level. They don't have any jurisdiction over the AFP, do they?
No, they don't. No, we definitely need a national one. I think what we also need is for the.
Do you think we'll get one under this government?
It needs to come from people, you know. It is certainly not a policy of this national government. But what we need as a progressive movement, and a really broad one, is to be constantly calling for one, because it is a measure that, if taken, is going to transform the balance between the way that power is wielded by our MPs at the moment, and really put it back in the hands of people and communities. So I feel like, you know, we do a lot of stemming of the wounds as we are dealing with these issues as they come up, but a human rights act could really just
Emily,
balance
this, this program and this station have been advocating for a human rights charter or a bill or whatever you want to call it for quite some time now. We don't see it as the panacea, but we do see it as being a very important framework that actually helps to really provide a benchmark by which you actually assess policy and programs going forward. So thank you for raising that again. Thank you for your time this morning, Emily. It's always great to...
Thank you generally, Emily, for the work of the centre. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic, and it's very high quality, reliable, thoughtful work, and really important part of our public discourse. Keep it up.
Thank you so much, Emily.
It's been a pleasure to be on. Thanks.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.